Hi, everyone, and welcome to Televisions, the podcast, an audio companion to the Televisions website and a show made by Anglophiles for Anglophiles. I'm Lacey Bogger, and I'm the editor here at Televisions. And joining me, as always, is my co-host and general partner in crime, Miss Annie Bundle.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you doing today?
I feel like I should have, if you hear like random banging in the background, it's because the kittens have discovered that my bedroom is where I go when I'm not with them, and they disapprove of me choosing not to be with them. So, sorry. Today is a week of their Gotcha Day, and
yay!
They're very cute. Annie just met them this morning, virtually.
They were not impressed. Cats are never impressed by Zoom. They just don't understand Zoom. You know, it's a human thing. Humans are weird.
I mean, honestly, aren't they lucky?
Yeah, seriously.
Don't we all wish we knew Zoom a little less well than we do right now?
My God. Seriously. Ugh. So what are we talking about today?
I guess I can't spend the whole episode talking about Baker, Lou, and Hammersmith, although I definitely could, but I don't think that people would listen to that. We are talking today about the new, I think that's being referred to as like a political thriller, Roadkill, which just started on Masterpiece. And I wonder if we're going to, you know, regret talking about it with just one episode to go. But I figured like it's new. We should talk about it.
Well, you know, I think it's very interesting because, you know, we've been watching Cobra for like the last 4 or 5 weeks at this point. We have one more episode to go after this week. And, you know, this is basically from the same team that brought us Cobra. And I find it very interesting to have watched Cobra and then watch this, or watch an episode of this and then watch an episode of Cobra, because you can really sort of see the same themes sort of coming out of the woodwork and sort of matching up in some places, especially, you know, the current episodes and, you know, Roadkill episode one, like very much that whole you know, we talked about this a little bit when we did our Cobra episode with Janet, is this whole like conservatives are good now. Tories are compassionate now.
Look at Roadkill.
And Roadkill is basically like taking that and sort of being like, and here's the underbelly of how actually they're all really terrible people.
Well, you know what's funny about that, and I promise we will actually like do a quick summary of what this show is about in a second. But I was reading a UK interview or something with David Hare, who is a playwright, who is known primarily as a playwright, I think, but who has also, you know, made some TV shows. He made Collateral a couple of years ago, and some other things that I'm sure I'm blanking on, because you all know that I don't do anything so basic as like open Wikipedia. But I was reading this interview, and he was basically, this isn't a direct quote, this is sort of how the journalist paraphrased it. Like, this is supposed to, he's a very openly sort of liberal person in real life, and his work tends to reflect that. And the interview was him basically saying that this was supposed to be his attempt of like his attempt at sort of like a good faith depiction of the Tories and conservatives in the United Kingdom and whatnot. And I don't know that I think he managed that at all.
You know, but let's back up. Okay, so the plot of Roadkill is that it begins with Hugh Laurie, who most Americans know from House, but also, you know, he
longtime Anglophiles will remember from Anglophiles, excuse my drinking coffee and trying to talk at the same time, will remember from a bit of Fry and Laurie. Like, a lot of people, I think of him as a comedic actor, but yeah. I think most Americans do tend to think of him as a dramatic actor. So there's not so much of like this, you know how sometimes when like people who do comedy are like, now I will do a serious role. Like, I think there's a little bit of that here, because Hugh Laurie is also a fairly like strident liberal person, I think, in real life. And I don't know. It doesn't, because of House and because of how successful House was, like this sort of like not serious actor person does serious actor role, like doesn't have the same like heft that it might have otherwise.
Yeah. I'm thinking of Sacha Baron Cohen, who was just in the trial of the Chicago 7 over on Netflix. Like that hits a lot harder because most of the time when we see him, we think of things like Borat. And yeah. like because, you know, I think in the UK, this probably hits more like that. Whereas over here, it's like, oh, it's the guy from House. Hey, he has a British accent. Who knew he could do one? Yeah, actually about that.
The number of people that I encounter who don't know that Hugh Laurie is not an American is a bit shocking.
Do you remember BBC America used to have this promo for Battlestar Galactica in which they would say Jamie Bamber is secretly British?
A well-known British program.
Right? Well, no, their excuse was that Jamie Bamber was on it. And the catchphrase was Jamie Bamber is secretly British. And you don't know it. And that's why you should watch this show.
I'm rolling my eyes. No one can see it.
When I think of Hugh Laurie, I think of that. I think of that mararketing thing. Hugh Laurie is secretly British.
Anyway, so and the show.
Yeah. so he's basically, he's a conservative party member, but he's not like from like the upper classes.
Peter Lawrence is his character's yeah. name, by the way.
Yeah. And he's not from the upper classes. He's actually like a self-made man. Like he really did bootstrap himself up. He comes from humble beginnings. And because of that, he's a bit of a right wing. I guess like you would think of him as a little, he does like talk radio. He's kind of a hero to people. People stop him in the street and take selfies with him. He's a little bit famous for being, you know, outside the norm that way. And he rides that a lot. Like he totally like he's like, oh no, oh shucks, I'm just, you know, I'm just a poor northern boy. I'm fine. And then like you know, he complains when he has to get in a car that isn't like the fanciest car there is. Like he's totally one of those people. He also, when we meet him, has just won a court case. One of the newspapers basically accused him when he was doing business in America of having basically profited he got people to pay him to come back to the UK and dismantle the NHS is what the idea is, and that he basically took kickbacks to start this process because Americans don't want the NHS because they find it threatening because it could lead to Medicare for All over here or something, and the idea is that he basically the newspaper accused him of this, and rather than just sort of let it go as a political scandal that was beneath him, he actually took
which
them
is
to
which is, you know, apparently I think what sort of British politicians are generally like expected to do. I think that's a yeah. plot point that they reference a bunch of times. Like he's not supposed to fight it in court is basically what it is.
Yeah, basically what he does is the very American thing of suing and winning. And but you know, within the first few minutes, like the barristers are talking, and the lead barrister, basically like turns to her name is Rochelle. She turns to her second, and she's like, "Yeah, these are the most satisfying." He's like, "What? The ones where you win?" And she goes, "The ones where you win, and you know he's guilty as hell." And that's sort of how this begins. And honestly, like. You know, the reporter who accused him of this, her career is basically ruined now. Like she's fired within the first few minutes of screen time.
Well, she also changed her story, which we'll yeah. get to a little bit later because I have some questions about that. But an important point in the trial.
Yeah. And like and now, you know, Peter Lawrence is basically riding high. He goes and he does his radio talk show and he talks for hours with his constituents and makes himself look great. He goes and sees the prime minister, who is played by the great Helen McCrory, who hints to him that, you know, the foreign secretary position is his for the taking for having won this court case. And isn't that great? But at the same time, like he also has other skeletons that are rattling around in his closet that are, you know, trying to come out now that his profile has been raised so high with this court case. And and one of them seems to be an out of wedlock daughter that he did not know exists and is currently residing in jail. And
I mean, isn't there something that's just all a little quaint about this? Like this I don't know how many of you guys watched like the American House of Cards. I was like one of the last people who was still like really into it, even after everything horrible about Kevin Spacey surfaced. And they finally gave me my season of Claire in the finale. But anyway, not the point. The point is, like, there's a point, and I think it's during season four, where I was like, wow, this is they're campaigning against some Republican, and he ends up sort of getting like his campaign gets pretty much like demolished because he like yells at an airline pilot. And this season came out in 2016. And I just remember thinking, isn't that like, doesn't that seem kind of weird? Well, not even weird. Like, that feels like it's from a different time, that some action like that might actually have serious consequences for someone's career. Like, isn't that quaint? Oh, he has an illegitimate child.
Well, you know, I think this is, and this has actually come up a bunch for me recently, partly because I covered things like the trial of the Chicago Seven, was that, you know, political films and TV shows are very much reactionary to the time that they're released in. So like The West Wing, for example, was, you know, the dream of the liberal that we could all feel good about. That it started, you know, at the end of the Clinton administration, which was a reaction very much to Bill Clinton and all his scandals. And then it became really popular as sort of an alternate fantasy when the Bush administration came into office, and it basically rode most of Bush's popularity. It ended in 2006, which is right when Democrats began to take power back. And at that point, that's when Sorkin's like star sort of fell, because the world changed and there wasn't that reaction.
Well,
world.
No, technically Sorkin wasn't involved. I'm sorry, I'm a West Wing stan. Okay. Sorkin left after season four.
Okay.
The last three seasons of the show, which are not as good as the first four, were, I forget the name of the person who was the showrunner, but it was not, in fact, Aaron Sorkin.
But my point is that it was born of Clinton and Bush, and it could not have survived the Obama administration, because then we would have had what the show was fantasizing. And that the House of Cards is the same thing. It was born of having this, you know, upright, you know, Democrat who always did the right thing and was squeaky clean, and we never had to worry about. So you get this, you know, sleazy, horrible, you know, person who's basically as underhanded as you could possibly imagine. And then we get someone who is, you know, much, much more, like, has way more drama than, you know, Frank Underwood could have even dreamed of. And suddenly, like, House of Cards just sort of fell a bit like a House of Cards, because it couldn't compete with reality. And yeah. I think that's the same thing we have kind of here with Roadkill. Even though, like, you know, Boris Johnson is kind of considered an idiot, to put too fine a point on it. but there's a level where, like, you look at Helen McCrory and you see that this is sort of the opposite of that. This is a very reactionary response to seeing Boris Johnson in power. Even though David Hare, I was at a group interview with him, and where he talked about, like, his inspiration for these characters, and he says that, like, both Helen McCrory's character and Hugh Laurie's character are definitely not based on, like, real politicians. Like, he was not in any way trying to write.
Well, yeah, I mean, you could sort of, with the Helen McCrory thing, yeah, the Helen McCrory's character, I think, suffers from the fact that, like, people have a very limited frame of reference for women in positions of power like this, and
yes,
everybody is either Margaret Thatcher or Hillary Clinton. Mm. So I think that whether or not they intended for Dawn to be like an Iron Lady-esque figure, like, that's where people's minds naturally gravitate, because that's the only sort of frame of reference that they have for a woman in that position. But I'm recapping Roadkill. Mm-hmm. And the thing that strikes me watching it is, I just don't know. Well, I will preface this by saying I think it's an incredibly well-made show. I think the cast is incredible. You know, just on fire everywhere. Like, Hugh Laurie is still, like, clearly having a blast playing this character. But it just feels for me like it's wandered in from a parallel dimension, like one where it's shocking that this man is a public servant who is also an incredibly corrupt grifter who uses his power to self-advance and sues people who try to hold him accountable, and, like, and has like a shady personal life with lots of personal moral failings. Like, it's just, I feel like the show wants me to think that that is very shocking, and it wants me to sort of like really like allow myself to enjoy and revel in this supposed public servant like Breaking Bad. But like, I hate to break it to them, I watch the news. Like, like I don't, like I don't know. Like, I know that no one had any idea what the world would be like when they released this show, and that accidents of timing are like
huge right now, especially now. Accidents of timing are huge right now, because we basically, especially in movies where there's like a 3-year lead time, but TV shows too.
I look at this and I'm like, does anyone, like, is there a person on the planet who doesn't already know that like the idea of like shame in politics is dead? Like that this is a thing that we watch happen all the time, where people who are supposed to be working for the public good, like, just brazen out some scandal of the moment and wait for the news cycle to move on. Like, that's what I'm watching every day in real life. Like, it feels so weird that the show seems to expect me to find, to like sort of both gasp at the audacity of this and also kind of gleefully enjoy the transgressiveness of it. And I'm like, it's not, like I said, I can, the news is on every day.
Well, you know, the thing is that I find your reading really interesting, because, you know, because those things are on the news every day, they simply just went right by me. Like, I didn't even register that I was supposed to be horrified or reveling in.
I mean, maybe you're not. But otherwise, like, why do you tell the story? Like, I don't know.
I honestly feel like we misclassified this when we were going through and doing assignments. Like, we should have looked at this and said, oh, Flesh and Blood is ending and then Roadkill starts, so this is the next mystery story. Because my response upon watching episode one is, oh my, it's a political mystery. Like, to me, it's all about, like, we're about to go with the reporter to Washington to find out the truth so that we can get the evidence to nail him to the wall, right? And, you know, secretly, you know, Julia and Duncan are having a love affair, and, you know, and who's betraying who, and, oh, look, Sydney actually knows the waitress who is trying to get the barrister. Like, it's all a mystery, and it's all backstabbing, and you're supposed to put it all together like a puzzle.
I did get kind of like a Richard, like, this is clearly like very different genre, but like sort of like a Richard Curtis vibe. You know how, like, sorry guys, Love Actually, I love it, haters to the left. But if you look at like his sorts of movies where it's like six different thematic, six different, like, purportedly different plot lines that all end up sort of intersecting by the end. Like, that is what this feels like to me, that obviously all of these people are gonna be connected to each other in some way.
When I was a kid, there was a thing about, you probably remember this, the vast right wing conspiracy.
Oh yeah.
I feel like Peter Lawrence could yell, you know, there is a vast conspiracy against him coming out of number 10. Except he'd be right. There is. Everyone is out to get this dude. And he's basically, like, his life is basically being, he's basically about to fall apart. And it's not anything he's actually done, even though he deserves it. It's that all of these people are quietly working behind his back to destroy him. And that being said, like, I can see why, for, especially in this day and age of grifting and misery and news that never shuts the heck up.
I know, it's like, surprise, political officials are grifters, news at 11.
Right? Like, yes, there's a level where very much that. But at the same time, like, I feel like this is supposed to be more about, like, the connections and the people backstabbing the grifter, trying to take down the grifter, and probably, I assume, failing by the end. I don't know. I haven't seen past episode one.
I haven't either, but I definitely, like, let me say this now, and we'll see what happens. But part of the way that I'm reading this, and the sort of, like, oh, we're supposed to, like enjoy this part is that we're supposed to, you know, he's probably going to get away with all of it. And that's supposed to be like shocking or whatever. And I'm like, again,
how does he slither out of this?
The news.
Yeah.
I feel like had this show arrived like 5 years ago, my response to it would be completely different than it is right now today.
I 1000% agree with you that there, that if this had come out in 2015, prior to Brexit, prior to, you know, the world as it is today, we would have.
Did Brexit happen in the show's universe? Like, I was very confused about this. They like threw off a line about it, and I'm like, I guess it did.
Yes, basically they basically excuse Brexit during the long monologue of him talking to different constituents in the radio show. He basically,
of course, he's a Man United fan, by the way.
Anyway, he basically says Brexit's in the past. You know, Brexit happened. Go get over it. Basically, we're not talking about Brexit anymore. That's so 2016. I mean, that's not exactly the line he says, but it's basically like,
but like that's the vibe.
Yeah, and that's how they excuse it, because they don't want to deal with Brexit, because there's a level where this show doesn't want to deal with the actual reality of politics today. And I understand that, you know, in a lot of ways, like to go back to the West Wing didn't want to deal with the actual politics of what was going on in the early aughts, right? Like it didn't engage with that. And this is basically attempting to do the same thing, you know, in a four episode format. So it, you know, whereas West Wing allowed itself a longer lead time to sort of build its alternate universe, so we never had to deal with those things. Here, because there's only four episodes, they sort of have to just be like, oh, hey, reality? Yeah, we're excusing that over here. Okay, let's keep going.
Right. Do you know what I think I would have really liked the show to be? Well, many things. But I think I would also be more into the show if it was actually about Dawn. Like, not just because, you know, I always want the shows to be about the ladies, but I think her character is one of the few that I really feel like her motivation is very complicated and it very much could go either way.
I want to know so much more about her. I want to know so much more about Julia. I want to know. Oh, can I just tell you, as a longtime Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. fan, when Ian...
Fitz.
When he came on, I screamed. I was like, no one told me Ian DeCaster was on this. Why didn't somebody tell me?
See, that for me is more entertaining. Watching him being kind of a scummy person.
Oh, it's great.
Really works because he spent like 8 years being Fitz on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So it's a really like interesting contrast. Whereas like, so much Hugh Laurie. But what was I going to say about Dawn? I was going to say that there's so much I want to know about her in terms of how she sort of like came into power in this party, but mostly like she's one of the I hope she gets like a little more depth over the course of the show, which I'm crossing my fingers will happen, because I mean you don't get Helen McCrory to just like not be amazing, but like I don't know if I'm supposed to assume that like she is genuinely trying to like sink Peter or use him for her own ends, or like some combination of both. Like that's it. That's the thing I'm most interested in, honestly.
I will say I also identify with her the most, because wow, Peter Lawrence's face when she told him she was making him in charge of justice. Oh, that was so great. And like you could just see like the twinkle in her eye that she was having so much fun with announcing that to him and watching his face fall. Like everything about that scene, that scene to me was one of the greatest scenes in the hour that we saw. Because it, you know, it really sort of encapsulated what this show does really well, which is political maneuvering. You know, it's funny because we'll talk much more about Cobra next week when Janet comes back and the show wraps up. But I feel like in the same way that that Cobra's strength a lot of times is in those political maneuverings and not in the personal life stuff, I feel like this has that same vein going to it. Like in a way, like, yeah, I'm kind of curious about the mystery of Peter Lawrence's daughter. But at the same time, I don't care.
I'm like, oh, no, he has an illegitimate child.
Right. Like there's a level where I just don't care, in the same way that I just don't care about like the love affair in Cobra or the daughter having the drugs in Cobra. Like I just don't care about those things. I care about the political intrigue.
Yeah, I care about, in Cobra, for example, I care about the daughter's drug thing in terms of how it impacts her dad's job.
Yeah.
Not so much that she did coke and one of her friends died. Who cares? But I mean, that sounds terrible, but you know what I mean? It's fictional people.
Yeah. I also really enjoy Julia, partly because the last thing I saw her in was Woman in White, where she played Laura.
I thought she looked familiar and I couldn't figure out why.
Yeah, that was the last thing that I think PBS viewers have seen her in. So in the same way that we're getting like evil Fitz, we're kind of getting evil Laura, and I kind of love it. Like I think both of them like are really well cast against the type in this show, which helps a lot. And I also am amused because we have at least a couple. We have at least one actor who I recognize as being in both Roadkill and in Cobra. Luke, the other barrister, the one that sleeps with the reporter and kind of gets her confidence up to go to Washington, he shows up in the later episodes of Cobra as Manish Patel.
Oh, I haven't caught up with Cobra, but clearly that's my homework for the week. But
keep your eyes peeled because it was kind of one of the, again, it was a much like with Flesh and Blood and Cobra, where the daughters on the phone are the same actress. This was a watching episodes back to back and going, hey, wait, wasn't he just
it's that guy?
Yeah.
Can we talk about Reporter Girl for a second?
The actress Sarah Green, by the way, if you watch Normal People, she was Lorraine. Oh, wait, you didn't watch Normal People, did you?
I did not watch Normal People, but I'm sure someone listening to this has.
Did you watch Penny Dreadful?
Oh, love Penny Dreadful.
Hecate. She's Hecate Poole.
Oh, also in the same season with Helen McCrory. Full circle. What was I going to say? I know her name is not actually Charmin, but that is what I keep calling her in my head.
It's fine. It's Charmaine.
Charmaine.
Yeah.
Or Charmaine. So many.
Actually, probably something like, I think actually most people pronounce it Charmian, but I like look at it and my brain goes Charmaine.
So Charmin.
No, we shouldn't do that. We should pronounce names properly.
Okay, fine. That's fair. Charmian?
Charmian.
Charmian. All right. So Charmian, maybe this is just a pet peeve I have because I watch like a lot of Supergirl, which is theoretically set at a newspaper and also has no idea how journalism works. But the fact that this, I have so many questions about this point in the plot line. Like, so she changed her story.
Mm-hmm.
And I question, I'm just like, so she changed her story. Like, did no one ask her for any physical evidence prior to this point? Why is she shocked that like her newspaper has sacked her after she cost them like £1 million? Like,
especially since her boss is Carrie Warlagan, for heaven's sakes. Though I will say my first response was that her boss is Tommy Lascelles from The Crown, and then I suddenly realized that that's also the guy who Pip Torrens, that's his name, also played Carrie Warlagan, and I was just like, seriously, girl, you work for Carrie Warlagan?
The uncle Warlagan. Yep. That's where I know him from.
Yep.
Okay. This is such a Hey, It's That Guy show.
I just
watch that plot line and I'm like, this is so like to beggar belief in terms of believability. Like, she did all this stuff and somehow during the trial, like, is asked for evidence. What? And then like decides, I'm very confused about why she decided to change her story. Like, and then suddenly be like, no, I'm going to prove that I was right the first time.
Yeah.
And do the work I should have done before.
I admit that I am also thoroughly confused by the way that this is being handled. And I think that, like you said, this is one of those things where the show doesn't quite know how newspapers work and doesn't want to. And so we're sort of suffering from that. It's a little bit to me of like, you know, I had this problem with Press and I've had it in a couple of others where there's an assumption on how reporters are sort of drunken or the fact that she's an alcoholic, like, that's so, God, hello, hand me a trope. There's so much about the way that they assume that newspapers work, the way that she comes to HR and basically, like, blackmails him to get her job back that way. Like, that is not how that works. That's not how any of that works. Right? Like, it is amazing how much that is not how that works.
Why didn't you just do your research before you got to court?
I know, and I don't understand it either.
Also, to your mystery point earlier, clearly we're supposed to be wondering who her original source was.
Yes, and that she probably was protecting her original source, and that probably her alcoholism will come into it. And, like, there's a whole, like, there's, as I said, like, I feel very much like I am watching a mystery show that's going to slowly, like, unfold, and I'm going to find out how all these people are connected to each other and so forth. Like, I really do feel like that's what I'm watching on this. And there's a level where I'm like, why am I not recapping it? Oh, right, because it's a political thriller. Okay, but this isn't really quite a political thriller. It's really more of an untraditional mystery, much like Flesh and Blood was.
I don't know if I would go that far, but I can see why you, who have a brain that is wired to mysteries, might read it that way. Maybe that's why you're sort of focused on that aspect of it, and I'm kind of looking at the sort of larger thematic thing going on here.
Yeah, like, I came away wanting to know, like, what has Sydney told Margaret that Margaret is trying to get the barrister Rochelle to learn about. By the way, the barrister, the Rochelle, I don't know what her last name is in the show, she's from Harlots.
Wait, really?
That's Harriet from Har-. Yeah, she played Harriet Lennox in Harlots. And
oh my gosh!
Yeah, so I wasn't sure if you'd recognized her or not. Again,
I did not.
As you said, this is a that guy show very much. Where, like,
yes,
going through the cast list of this and realizing where I'd seen all these people was quite fun.
I mean, the cast list is so stacked; it makes me wish that I liked it a little bit more than I do. I don't dislike it, but I also just, like, I think I texted you this after I watched the first episode, and I was just like, I just don't understand why in the year of our Lord 2020 the show really exists. Because I guess, from, if you want to argue your perspective that it's really a mystery and not a political show, that's one thing. But, like, if it is a political show for me, it's not saying anything that I particularly find new or interesting in this dumpster year. But I am very interested. Well, I just think it's, I keep thinking about the David Hare interview that I read, that this was supposed to be, like, a good faith kind of depiction of Tories. And then I look at Peter Lawrence and I'm like, is it though? Because I get the feeling that I'm supposed to be reading him, or I'm supposed to be reading his sort of conservative belief system as something that's sincere. But then again, I also feel like Hugh Laurie is playing it like he's clearly aware of the grift, if you will, that he's, like, that this doesn't necessarily come from, like, a real desire to reform government so much as it does to privatize the NHS, which I don't, like, if that's supposed to be because he thinks it's really the best for the UK, like, I don't think it's making an argument that is anything other than, well, he's going to make some money if he sells it to American businesses, basically.
I will say this about, I feel, okay, and this might just be because of my upbringing and what I understand of British, of how British people feel about the NHS versus how the government treats the NHS, is that any government official who is portrayed as trying to privatize the NHS is automatically evil. And I sort of had that feeling. I brought it up a little bit when we were talking about Flesh and Blood in the first episode, that I got the sense that the oldest daughter, Helen, was, we weren't supposed to like her because her job was basically to streamline and ruin the NHS. And so when Peter Lawrence's character is basically, you know, says, I'm not trying to privatize the NHS. I forget exactly what language he uses, but he uses, like, some, you know, some,
like, solidify or something, like, or fortify, yeah, like something in that kind of vein. That's not the right word either, but
right, like, it's basically a dog whistle that he spits out, that we, that,
and the way he says it, he knows what that sort of language shift means.
Yes, he knows it's a dog whistle, and he knows what he's saying, and he knows the code that he's talking in, and he's sort of laughing about it while he says it. And it's you know, my response to that is, oh, well, obviously this is an evil character who I am supposed to root against. Like, that is my even if Hugh Laurie is absolutely likable, and even if, like, the character clearly is coming across as the character that I'm supposed to sort of, you know, root for the way that one rooted for Walter White in Breaking Bad, right? Like, when I hear that, my brain goes, oh, evil character.
Yes, and also because, like, if this is supposed to be, like, a good faith representation of it, they're doing a really terrible job of it, because that is such, like, charged language about it. It's not a real depiction of a good faith argument against a good faith argument about what should be done about healthcare in the UK.
Right. It's a little bit like if we had an American show where a character was like, and abolish it, and just sort of tossed along the phrase abolish Obamacare. Like, that's such a charged phrase in our lexicon right now. And it has so much political and cultural meaning to us as Americans. And I feel like that's language that in the UK signifies so much that we as Americans almost don't understand because we don't live it. You know,
like, this is really weird, but what I thought of yesterday when I watched or whatever day, what meaning does time have? Whenever I watched the new trailer for The Crown, and they have that moment where Gillian Anderson is Margaret Thatcher and she's talking about how she's making the UK like self-sufficient and self-reliant and whatever, like, we can all feel however we feel about Thatcherism and like what hath her political plans wrought. But I 100%, even in that tiny scene, believe that she believes in it.
Oh, yes.
Like, that she thinks she's doing the best for England, and this is why. I don't get that sense from Peter Lawrence. I get the sense that he's like, well, I'm a Tory, and these are the things that I have to say because this is the party platform or whatever. I don't get a sense that he has a personal sort of, I'm working towards this because I think it's for the best interest of the country, if that makes sense. That was a really like long thing, but
no. The only thing that Peter Lawrence is supposed to care about, as far as I understand it, is Peter Lawrence. That the only things he wants are to have a car that picks him up with his favorite driver, that's clean and sexy and will take him around. That he only wants, like, to be left alone with his mistress and not have anybody, like, look twice at him. You know, he wants to be the man of the people and also be the high powered foreign secretary. It's all about him. And again, like, I think if this were 2015, especially here in America, though over in the UK still, but I think especially here in America, this would read very differently if we hadn't just had 4 years of that.
Because it would have been like, look, this is transgressive and kind of like you're allowed to sort of gleefully enjoy this, much the same, like, in that you mentioned Breaking Bad, but much like in the same way that you're kind of allowed to enjoy like Walter being so terrible, but still with the kind of moral distance of, like, you know that he's a bad person and doing a bad thing, but you get to exist in a world that's sort of like, well, this would clearly never happen because we have norms and our politics isn't like that. Well, again, the news is on. So
yeah, exactly. You know, I am looking, all that being said, I am really looking forward to seeing the next episodes and seeing, like, what these secrets are that people are, like, hinting at. You know, to me, it is a fun mystery. Like, I want to know more about Margaret and Sydney. Oh, by the way, Margaret, did you recognize her? That's Cho Chang from Harry Potter.
What? Oh my gosh, did not know that. Oh, wait, for some reason, I don't know why my brain went there. This has nothing to do with Harry Potter. But I was just like, the barrister, whose name I can't remember.
Mm-hmm. Rochelle?
Yes. Who is suddenly like, I just won this very high profile case and I definitely thought he was guilty. But oh well, until I get an anonymous phone call, like I get like a spam call from some random who's like, hey, you should look into him. And then she's like, I guess I'll look into him. was like so weird.
Right? Like, yeah, again, there is definite like, you know, coincidence, like, you know, these are all very convenient plot things that are sort of contrived. That's hard in a way for us as to kind of take, you know, like you sort of have to just sort of let it go that, like, you know, all these connections are there and that all of this is going on. Like, I don't know.
Oh, and we forgot about the drug snorting daughter.
Oh, we did forget about the drug snorting daughter because I didn't care about the drug snorting daughter, really.
Not at all. I was like, oh, no, you have a problematic child. That's new.
Yeah, and I feel like that was another moment where I was like, oh, look, it's another Cobra plot line that sort of wandered in.
I know, right? At least she hasn't murdered anyone yet, but she does like coke. Could happen.
Yeah, like all of this, there's...
Did coke, like, make a comeback and I missed it? Like, I just, well, not that it, and I say missed it in the sense of like...
Listen, we're old
now,
it's
I would
have
definitely
fine.
Missed it. I'm old. I'm not doing any of that. But like, I thought we'd probably moved on to a different sort of like party drug, but I guess everyone loves coke again.
Yeah, probably. I think there's just some drugs that never quite go out of style. They just become like, you know, they're cyclical.
I guess what, like it's like a teen drug now instead of like a hedge fund manager in the 80s.
Anyway, I am looking forward to more of this. I feel like what interests me about it isn't the mystery part, and you know, seeing how Helen McCrory uses all of these threads.
I'm here for Dawn. That's it. The show should just be called Dawn.
I'm here for the mysteries. I'm here for the answers, and I'm here to see Helen McCrory use all of it against him.
Exactly. I mean, I as much as I'm just like sort of like side eye emoji at it, it's a very well made show. Like it looks great. The cast is incredible. Like it moves at like a good clip. I did not feel bored during this episode at any point, even though I was like a prison riot. Really?
Yeah, on PBS, really?
But I was just. And I'm assuming that girl who like didn't want to be part of the riot and then was like, whatever, I guess I'll be part of the riot, is really Lawrence's daughter.
Yeah, I assume that's the daughter as well. And again, yeah, in the same way, I feel like if I hadn't seen Cobra first, I might have been more shocked by the prison riot. But because I have watched several episodes of riots and near lynchings and hotel fires.
Oh my gosh.
And yeah, like the
you know, I gotta give Cobra credit. Like that show does not make a lot of sense sometimes, but it is just like going for it.
I have a lot of opinions about that when we get back to it.
I respect that in the sense that like it's just like, you know what, we are definitely gonna have a mob try to draw and quarter this man, and that is a plot point. But so, you know, I can't like look away from Cobra, but it has a more slightly train wrecky feel than this show does.
This show feels much tighter.
Yeah, maybe that's why Cobra feels more fun than this one does. Because it's like literally anything could happen at any moment.
It's kind of riding a knife's edge that way, whereas
this has got that very like prestige drama feel.
Yeah.
Even though we're supposed to sort of like, you know, we're supposed to find joy in watching him behave poorly. There's still, you know, like a distance from it, whereas Cobra's just like, we're gonna light this on fire right now.
And you know, the world could prove me wrong, but I feel like Roadkill does feel like a 4-episode show. Like I feel like this is a show that's coming in with a beginning, a middle, and a definite end, and it does not want to do more of them. Whereas Cobra, like, at first, I didn't know. If I hadn't known there was a season 2, I probably would have thought it was a one and done. But the longer I watch it, the more I'm like, literally anything can happen in this show, so why not do another one?
I know. It's like Cobra, : why not? Like, that's the subtitle of this show. And Roadkill does really have that very, like, this is a prestige masterpiece show. Like, I can see why we're airing this. I can see why, like, we're embracing it. I lament the timing of it, because I feel like watching this right now in the middle of election season after this year has just really impacted how I think it lands and not always to its benefit.
Agreed.
Is that it for the week?
I think so.
Well, okay. We will come back to this more towards the end probably. And see what happens. So, Annie, tell everybody where you live on the internets.
You can find me at Annie Bundle on Twitter. You can find me at Miss Annie Bundle on Facebook. You can find my cat at Annie Bundle on Instagram. I'm a staff writer at Elite Daily. I write a whole lot for a little site called televisions.org that you may have heard of. I also freelance around the web. So if you follow me on Twitter and be my friend, you'll see all of my bylines tweeted out there.
Dun, dun.
And in fact, I have a piece this weekend that's all about Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and the cast here. So you can, well, basically the whole cast. So you can when I tweet that out, you can read it.
Aw, I will read that. I am Lacey MB on Twitter, LACYMB. And I also write a lot here at Televisions, including the recaps for the show we just talked about. And I cover a lot of other things, but just be my friend. I always treat my bylines. Plus, I have cat pictures now. So it's really just like a win-win. FYI, for those of you who would like to get to know the boys on a deeper level, they have their own Instagram because I am a loser, and it is Baker and Hammer. They're adorable.
Yay!
What else? I will say that Televisions is brought to you by WETA, and if you like what we do, visit televisions.org and click on the donate button up top to help us keep doing it and support public media at the same time. I believe this episode is scheduled to drop on Election Day, so if you have not done your civic duty and voted yet, this is my plea for you to do so. Your vote is your voice. You should not waste it. Let us respect all the people who have come before us and fought for the right to use their voice and go vote today. So thanks. You can follow the pod and the site on social media at tele_visions on Twitter, Televisions blog, all one word, on Facebook, and of course, as always, at televisions.org. You can email us at televisions@weta.org if you have thoughts, want to share your opinions about Roadkill, if you're also tired of political thrillers in these dark times. And I think that is it for this week. Again, please vote. It's important. Take care of yourselves. Wear a mask. Wash your hands. Social distance. Look out for one another. We're all we got. And we'll see you next week.